Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. What a time to be alive. Amazing what's happening today. So much to talk about. We need to talk about the Trump indictment. People were saying, Jeff, you weren't interested. And I wasn't interested because we had nothing, and it all felt very soft. It all was very dark. Like, how could you get to 37 counts? We just didn't know just how weak the case would be. And so I was like, maybe it's a strong case, maybe it's not a strong case. 34 felony counts. And it turns out that it's an extremely weak case, but so much that for the first time in my life, I find myself agreeing with John Bolton, a warmonger, fake Republican, who is such a fake Republican that they have him as a talking head on CNN. I mean, that's the level of John Bolton. He is talking on CNN, and holy shit, he's right. He's right that the Trump trial is based on absolute crap. It could all fall on a motion to dismiss, perhaps, if we had a fair judge. I don't know if we're going to get this, but certainly it's the weakest case I have seen. I've never seen such a weak case in criminal court. It's a first. I don't know what would happen. And meanwhile, there's an InfoWars going on, and I'm seeing it from the back scene. Yes, they are repetitive count. They're all about, okay, well, 12 checks because he was paying every month. So 12 checks, each of the check is a crime. Then 12 reportings of those checks inside the books of the Trump organization. Well, each reporting of those checks is a false statement. So all crimes. And then 12 invoices sent to Michael Cohen that states, you know, I'm paying you for your lawyer services. And it's really repetitive. That's just how repetitive it is. That's why the count is so close to 36, because it's 12, 12, 12. But perhaps there's 2 months where he doesn't write these things. But it is ridiculous, extremely weak. And meanwhile, the Democrats are lying on the social media. And back in the days, you wouldn't have fact checkers checking them. But thankfully, I have been integrated in the community notes of Twitter, and we're leading a war in the back scene that you guys don't see. You couldn't believe it. And I'm so in admiration for what Elon has put together with the community notes. He democratized them. He invited people of different cognitive styles so that I don't find myself isolated at all. It's balanced. The community notes is balanced. Very often, I find myself supporting posts, supporting fact checks that seem to come from someone who has a right-wing mind, someone who is pro-Republican. And we do get a lot of attempts at smearing the right wing. And so we combat the left. The whole idea is on the community notes, all of the community notes that you see, that's like 1% of the community notes that are proposed. You see the 1% where both of the left and right kind of agree, or people who used to disagree with one another in the past end up agreeing that this note is useful and good. That's where you get to see it. But 99% of the community notes, it's a big war that's happening behind the scene. And I'm part of this war at this point. And just to show you what has been the big coordinated lie of the Democrats today, they said, holy shit, Donald Trump Jr. just posted a photo of the judge's daughter on Truth Social. There is no rock bottom with these people. They have no shame, and they are literally sowing the seeds for violence. I hope the judge imposes a gag order on all of them. But it's not true. And this kind of tweet has been tweeted by the whole Democrat establishment exactly 3 hours ago. All of them coming out at the same time, all together. Because they wanted a gag order on Trump, which they didn't get. The judge didn't keep Trump from talking about anything. So there is no gag order, but they wanted it. And so they made up this lie. What are the true facts? And very soon, I suspect that you will see fact checks appearing from Community Notes, because all of these tweets have been making it to Community Notes because they were controversial. Donald Trump Jr., first, it's not Donald Trump, it's Donald Trump Jr. Secondly, he didn't post a photo of the judge. He posted an article that was questioning the political links of the daughter of the judge, who is an adult and a Democrat. She is part of the Democrats' team. She is one of these media people or something like this. So he posted this article, but then when you post an article on Truth Social or on Twitter or on any social media, it ends up showing a thumbnail. Now, the thumbnail happened to have been chosen by Breitbart to show the daughter of the judge beside the judge. Of course, the article was about her. But it's not Donald Trump Jr. posting the photo. It's Donald Trump Jr. linking to an article that happens to talk about the daughter of the judge. And so these kinds of lies is what we see behind the scene at Community Notes. And so I review the fact checks very positively for those tweets, because they are misleading. You are led to believe that somehow Donald Trump Jr. took a JPEG of the girl and posted it. But see, he's already getting called out by people on Twitter. You won't post the photo because you're a lying hack. He shared a true story showing that she worked on the Biden-Harris campaign. I can't wait to see if they're going to put up the Community Notes, because I think it's very important. It's important that the left gets called out equally, because we've had a whole 2-3 years under Twitter systematically just using fact checks against the right. And I'm seeing the balance being reversed. And that is so beautiful. And ultimately, when I work on these things, I'm becoming addicted. I can spend an hour or two a day just not true. And I do deep research so that I'm certain that my evaluations are supported. Sometimes I will have to read the whole article to make sure, well, is there a misunderstanding here? Is the Community Note properly written? And as I participate to this, I really have the impression that Elon Musk has put together a truth-seeking machine. It's amazing. Amazing, because you have to specify, why is it not true? Is it irrelevant? Does it connect to the claim of the tweet? Is it false? Is it supported by the source? Is there a source? Is there a problem in the way the source is represented? And by answering these checkboxes, then the algorithm can take all of this info from various users of Twitter and make an integrated decision that says, all right, that looks like truth. That's the closest I've ever gotten to an epistemological machine. And I can't believe that a couple of months ago I was still banned on Twitter, and yet today I'm chilling there and helping the truth comes ahead. Look, Alvin Bragg, absolutely incompetent DA, funded by George Soros. George Soros, of course, people would be saying, well, it was an indirect donation. It was not a direct donation. Okay, so funded by George Soros, he decides to go after Donald Trump, where if it wasn't that he can connect these payments to something that he can argue is a felony crime, the things that are being reproached to Donald Trump would be misdemeanors. But he's trying to build an argument, because if there were misdemeanors, then there would be no prosecution possible, because the statutes of limitation have been passed. So it's impossible for him to pursue it as misdemeanor. So what does he do? He tries to somehow connect the fact that the payments that Trump would have lied about on his own checks and on his own Trump's organization internal documents were meant to violate some, to commit some crimes, fraud. Now, what is the fraud? Because if he's been guilty of fraud, Trump would already been in jail. So what is the fraud? Well, the fraud, believe it or not, Alvin Bragg claims, is a conspiracy to commit fraud against the American public by hiding information from them. A crime that he has not been found guilty of. So here we have Alvin Bragg trying to do an overreach in which he would have to convince the jury that these lies that were written on the checks, just the fact that the check is not identified as hush money, but it's identified as liar payment to Michael Cohen, he would have to make the case that somehow a crime was the ultimate purpose of those lies. And the crime is the crime of lying to the American public as part of the Democratic election. Now, there are so many problems with this. First, the elections are a federal affair. Now, what does he claim? And, you know, it's not clear that lying to the American public is a crime already. Now, what does Alvin Bragg claim? He claims that there is a law in New York that does make lying to the American public in elections a crime. Now, John Bolton correctly points out, it's not even clear that this would apply in a federal election. It could be considered that the local law can only apply in elections that relate to New York directly, but that it cannot apply on something that is clearly a federal responsibility. So that's the first problem. The second problem is he's not even including a description of what is it the crime that you're going to claim has been the target of Trump. What is the crime? Look at his response.
Mr. Bragg, the indictment says that there were 34 false business records. And they were done to conceal another crime, but the indictment does not.
So here the journalist, we don't quite hear the journalist, but he's asking, why don't you mention the crime? What is the other crime that you're talking about? Because there's the crime that Michael Cohen confessed, but that there's a problem there. Michael Cohen may have known that he was committing a crime in relation to, you know, hiding the fact that this was a campaign expense. But Trump may not have known that Michael Cohen was committing the crime. So you have already a problem of mens rea here. You have to think that Trump knew it was a crime, knew Michael Cohen was in a situation where he would commit that crime. You have to invoke quite a conspiracy based solely on the words of Michael Cohen here. And a recording, but the recording, amazingly, doesn't seem to show Trump being aware that a crime is being committed here. It's not a recording where we see Trump saying, let's commit fraud on the public. It's a recording where he says, all right, how much money should we pay for this? And Trump might be able to make the argument in court that how much money should we pay for this that wasn't aimed at the particular situation of Stormy Daniels.
So let me say as an initial matter, the indictment doesn't specify that because the law does not so require.
So it doesn't specify in the indictment the crime that should be committed to justify a statute that requires a crime to have been committed. See, just lying is not a crime. Lying on a business record with the intent, in relation to a crime being committed, that is the crime. Now, there's three layers here. You have to be lying first. That's not a crime. You have to be lying on a business record. That's not a crime or misdemeanor. Anyways, it wouldn't be valid a misdemeanor here. You need to be lying on a business record while committing a crime, a felony crime. And the felony crime would be, as far as we can tell, lying to the American public. So there's two layers of lying suddenly. So you're claiming that Trump lied on his check, which is a business record. And then you're claiming that he lied on his check to lie to the American public. And that lying to the American public is a crime in New York, which has its own special election law, which it's not clear if it constitutionally applies because it's a federal election.
In my remarks, I mentioned a couple of laws, which I will highlight again now. The first is New York State election law, which makes it a crime to conspire to promote a candidacy by unlawful means.
So we are at the fourth layer here. It makes it a crime. The special law in New York makes it a crime to obtain a victory in election through unlawful means. Okay, so there's four layers here. Three of them are about lying. So one, you can't lie, but that's not a crime. Two, that lie cannot be on a business check because a business check is a business record. That would be a misdemeanor. Three, you cannot lie on a business record as part of the commission of a crime. And four, we have this law in New York that makes it a crime to win an election by unlawful means. But for the means to be unlawful, it would have to be the case that the entire thing was per se a crime, was a crime to begin with. Things don't become a crime because you've integrated into the unlawful. It's a circular relationship between arguments 2, 3, and 4 here. It's like, oh, this justifies the unlawfulness term of this law. And this law then kind of finds after the fact, post hoc, that therefore it was a crime and therefore it was a felony because it was part of a felony because this statute says that you cannot do this through unlawful means. What is the initial observation? What is the initial claim about what makes this whole thing unlawful to begin with? We don't have insight here from Alvin Bragg. Why? His response, because the law doesn't force me to give you insight at this point. Holy shit.
I further indicated a number of unlawful means, including more additional false statements, including statements that were planned to be made to tax authorities.
False statements made to the tax authorities.
False statements, including statements that were planned to be made to tax authorities.
Statements that were planned to be made to tax authorities. So he's not even made the statements. Statements that they found in the Trump Organization folders, but they were never given to the tax authorities, but he planned, he was planning to lie to the tax authorities.
I also noted the federal election law cap on contribution limits.
But why weren't there?
And then that is his last argument. Contribution limits. I don't know exactly how this will play out, but it seemed to me that there was a special rule for rich people engaged in election where themselves giving money to their own campaign is not subject to the limitations. Am I divagating here, or do I remember something that was real? It seems to me that Trump had been given hundreds of millions or something like this to his own campaign, and that this has been established to be okay because you cannot limit a president giving himself the money because there's all sorts of circular arguments about the First Amendment and money is speech and all sorts of things. But it seems to me that Trump is not limited. So what is the claim here? Is it that he made a contribution to Michael Cohen? Was Michael Cohen running an election? Or that he made a contribution to spending limits? Not clear what will happen with this one. But it doesn't seem to be particularly strong here.
Those crimes charged. What can he charge with those crimes?
Well, I'm not going to go into our deliberative process on what was brought. The charges that were brought were the ones that were brought. The evidence and the law is the basis for those decisions.
So zero insight. And when Papa JF ends up agreeing with John Bolton, you know something is wrong here. Let's hear him. Amazing.
For you, one big picture, what do you think of the indictment?
Well, speaking as someone who very strongly does not want Donald Trump to get the Republican presidential nomination, I'm extraordinarily distressed by this document. I think this is even weaker than I feared it would be. And I think it's...
Yes! Yes, thankfully, John Bolton sees the same thing. Weaker than we expected. Weaker than I expected.
It's easily subject to being dismissed or a quick acquittal for Trump. Just speaking, going back to the days when I represented Jim Buckley and Gene McCarthy and the constitutional challenge to the underlying federal statute here passed in 1974, I can say there is no basis in the statutory language to say that Trump's behavior forms either a contribution or an expenditure under federal law, the two key definitions at issue here.
So here, very interesting, because I'm not aware that those payments have ever led to Trump being found guilty of a fraud of the election commission at the federal level. So how is it that a New York district attorney can decide, well, he wasn't found guilty, but I can convince a jury here that there's a crime there? This is a weakness of the law, in my view. The simple fact that we can get here is a problem.
If it did, it would mean that every single expenditure a candidate made could be taken to have something to do with his campaign. Do I buy a $1 comb to comb my hair or a $10 comb to comb my hair? If you can construe the statute to cover this behavior, then I think it violates the First Amendment, because you're deeply into territory that makes this statute, absolutely, the federal statute, too vague for enforcement. And as what I understood the district attorney to say, that he thinks there's a New York election law involved here, all I can say is the Federal Election Campaign Act absolutely preempts any state or local law to the contrary. How could it be otherwise? You've got one law governing corporate finance in a presidential election at the federal level. You're going to have 50 state laws interfering with it. So he's just wrong on the applicability of the New York statute.
One
beautiful delivery, absolutely correct. So basically, we may have here a case of a DA who totally misinterprets the law, probably intentionally, because he's on a path of extension, overextension, trying to find something wrong with all this. And he had to construe a story just to justify that those were felonies and therefore not subject to the same statutes of limitation as the misdemeanor equivalent, and we have the result, an extreme overreach. Silver Spider says, Trump buys a $10,000 comb made of 24K gold to comb his hair. Yeah, I totally agree with his point. Because it's a personal affair, it's related to the Trump business much more than the Trump election. You know, it's about his sexual behavior, and if you cannot handle that kind of thing in your personal life, if you have to pass through a campaign fund, that raises many questions about everything being potentially, everything that you do, including surviving with food, could be a federal campaign expenditure. New guy says the law is designed to find everyone guilty. That is a big problem. So Trump is on his Telegram. He's now planning to do remarks and a rally at Mar-a-Lago as he comes back in plane at 8:15 p.m. Eastern Time. He will be at Mar-a-Lago. And he says, Alvin Bragg shut down New York City, brought in 38,000 NYPD officers, and will spend an estimated $200 million of New York funds for a totally legal 130,000 NDA. So here we start having insight on what is the plan of Trump here. He's going to totally acknowledge that there was an NDA. He's going to argue, okay, yes, this money was sent for an NDA, but there was no intent to deceive. There was no intent to participate to a crime. This was, in my view, something that belonged to me and the Trump Organization to deal with. He says, on top of all that, the Ninth Circuit Court just awarded me $122,000 over the $500,000 already awarded from Stormy Horseface Daniels. Yes, dramatically, as Trump was on the plane coming back from his New York arrest, a judge in the case of Stormy Daniels has awarded further money to Trump for attorney expenses and fees, which is the very woman that is now used in the New York case to go after him. So, holy shit, so much drama in all this, but we need to go back to the facts. The statement of facts of Alvin Bragg. Let's see what's under the hood. Before we review the statement of facts, first, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show, and we do need your support to keep going. Make sure you add a payment method in your Odyssey account to be able to send Super Chats. Alternatively, if you don't like Odyssey, use the Entropy link in the description below. Entropy has been enabling the watching the stream through their website, so you can now be only on the page of Entropy and you'll be able to still hear and see me. Before we go through the statement of fact, let's look at the indictment. So the indictment is so repetitive that I can basically scroll at that speed. And let me tell you what it is. So one count is for an invoice from Michael Cohen. Second count, a lie on the detailed general ledger for the Donald Trump Revocable Trust. Falsifying business records. It's always falsifying business records. Another general ledger for the Donald Trump Revocable Trust. And now we start check number 138. The general ledger of the Revocable Trust. Voucher of the general ledger number 846907. So we are repeatedly going through every single piece of paper, and each piece of paper constitutes a lie that would be falsifying business records in the first degree. So check number 147. And it's check number, general ledger, check number, invoice to Michael Cohen, check number, invoice to Michael Cohen, and that's just what it is. From top to bottom, you could have made this in a single page. Instead, they've developed it over 16 different pages. It's all copy-paste. It's copy-paste, and where each piece of paper has been termed a lie in and of itself. Paladin sends $25. Thank you so much. He says, crypto markets seem to respond to banking fraud and economic instability by pumping higher. Do you think Trump's popularity will experience a feverish increase the more they try to punish him? I believe, based on what we see today, that they are on such a short case. Even people who were very on ABC News. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was seeing today. On ABC News, which I would expect to be anti-Trump, a bunch of leftists, they were like, someone, I don't even remember who was commenting, but he was saying, I think it was Chris Christie that was there as a commentator, and, you know, he's a Republican. But I don't think he's particularly pro-Trump at this point. And he was saying, I hope it's not Alvin Bragg's best day. In other words, I hope for him that he has something hidden. Because if what we see on paper is all you got, it's fucking ridiculous. And yes, it will it will inflame the population into a wave of emotional support toward Trump. That is no doubt. Unless we see something more, unless they come out with some surprise, which I'd be surprised at this point. If they had some surprises, they would have delivered it in the process of the indictment. They wouldn't have wanted to risk an indictment failing. So I suppose that what we see as the statement of fact here is all they have. So the defendant Donald Trump repeatedly and fraudulently falsified New York business records to conceal criminal conduct that hid damaging information from the voting public during the 2016 presidential election. He orchestrated a scheme where, in order to execute the unlawful scheme, the participants violated election laws and made and caused false entries in the business records of various entities in New York. The participants also took steps that mischaracterized for tax purposes the true nature of the payments made in furtherance of the scheme. But as we have seen, this whole idea that there is a scheme here relies on circular definitions of unlawful, playing volleyball, basically. A term unlawful in one statute, playing volleyball with another that says, oh yeah, you can lie, but you can't lie as part of the commission of a felony. It is all resting on branches. One component of the scheme, so lawyer A is Michael Cohen, who would have paid $130,000 to Stormy Daniels. He made the payment through a shell corporation. So basically, we know this story because it's already been talked about, and this is something for which Michael Cohen idiotically, put himself in jail. He pleaded guilty to something that to me is not even clear yet was a crime. But when you plead guilty, the problem is you're basically witnessing to your own state of mind. And you're saying, oh yes, I intended this as fraud. But the case was so weak that even his pleading guilty didn't result in Trump being found guilty of the thing that he was supposedly a co-conspirator on. So then the Trump Revocable Trust... So that doesn't seem like something illegal. They were just holding the Trump Organization assets while he was elected president. The checks were initially processed from the Trump Organization and eventually were signed by... So basically, there's three checks from the organization, and then eventually Donald Trump starts signing the checks in his own name. I don't see anything wrong with this. From approximately June to November 2016, the defendant was a candidate, blah, 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 so he becomes a candidate. And you keep seeing this repeated on the news, the catch and kill. Catch and kill. And I actually wanted to make my thumbnail, but I thought it would be too deceptive. But I wanted to make a comedic thumbnail that shows Trump kidnapping and murdering a piece of paper because... Because the whole catch and kill, I mean, I can't believe that they include these words, you know, in the criminal context where catch and kill sounds like kidnapping and murder. But no, Trump catched and killed a story. He caught and killed a piece of paper with a potential story about him, revealing his private sex life. So the catch and kill scheme, they talk about his friend at American media. I forget his name, but he's the guy who had promised at the National Enquirer, who had spoken to Trump at the beginning of the election and had said, you know, I'm going to stand with you. I'm going to give you favorable coverage. And if someone comes to me with some dirt on you, I will basically come to see you and you pay me and I won't publish the dirt. So I don't know that this is... I mean, you could make the argument in a different case. You could make the argument that perhaps this is a cartel and perhaps it's a violation of antitrust law. But this is not what's at hand here, since if there was a violation of antitrust law, we would expect Bragg to be suing for this. So if you don't present this as a violation of antitrust and the establishment of a cartel, because there is some amount of deception involved, where someone who has a story, they come to the National Enquirer with the belief that they're gonna get the story out, you know, but then the National Enquirer buys the story, but to shut it down. It's kind of deceptive, but I don't know that it's illegal. I don't know that it's illegal, especially if the so-called victims in the end get sped by the National Enquirer and they're very happy about it. Turns out that actually with this whole catch and kill scheme, they actually caught a dishonest guard of the Trump Tower, a guy who was working as a guardian at the bottom of the Trump Tower, who came out at the doorman, who came out with a false story about Trump fathering a child, hiding the child from the public. But eventually it got proven. They bought the story, but eventually it got they learned that it was false to begin with. So basically this catch and kill scheme has hidden a lie from the public. Can you believe this? Has succeeded at making the campaign more truthful. It's going to be hard in front of a jury to make the case, oh yeah, this is all criminal. Because, I mean, this catch and kill saved the public from being misled by a doorman of the Trump Tower. Sharia sends a super chat and he says, M, just like this, M. Well, if that's how you feel, bro, you go ahead. Hem. Did not publicize damaging allegations. So basically, that's the story they were able to neutralize. We don't have much. People were excited that the AMI CEO, that the guy is going to be one of the witnesses. I wouldn't be too excited. I think that this guy could very well veer in any direction. You never know with someone who's like a Trump loyalist in his heart. He may be actually deceiving them to think that they have a case. He may be, when he arrives at the trial, he may do like these Italian mobster in whatever movie where the guy is like, this guy never committed a crime. Oh, what are you talking about? And you can't do anything about it. Ariel Suarez says, sis, in Surya's case, let's not misgender our chatters. Oh, Surya is a woman? Well, I didn't know this. Well, it's good to know. Hello, Surya, and sorry for misgendering you. Suppressing woman one account. So basically, there's two women plus one doorman who got their stories suppressed. It's all the same thing, the publishing of the tape, Access Hollywood, some woman wanting to come out about it. So it's pretty much the same modus operandi. And ultimately, it boils down to he transferred money to Michael Cohen. And Michael Cohen, although we don't have an admission by Trump up to now that he was doing all of this transfer of money to hide anything. In fact, on the only audio recording we have in this case seems to show a Trump that says, oh yeah, let's do it by check. That way there will be a record. So how are you going to make the argument to the jury that this was all stemming from Trump and that it had a deceptive intent? If when you have a deceptive recording of him, a recording that was obtained without his consent and knowledge, where he appears to be just saying, yeah, let's go by check, it's going to be clearer. Sharia says, Jeff, the text box wouldn't allow me to type anything or delete the letter. M. Hi, Jeff. Hi. Okay, well, that's too bad. Hopefully it is corrected now. Post-election communication. So they show the whole scene of Trump eventually talking after the whole facts and comforting his co-conspirators, but he's not converting them in the sense that, oh yeah, what you did is illegal. He's just encouraging them to be loyal, and they get tempted to denunciate Trump because there's a lot of media pressure to get dirt on Trump. And so he's reminding them by emails, you know, be loyal. Why would you betray me? Then they argue that by designating Lawyer A, which is Michael Cohen, as being paid for in the invoice as a retainer agreement, then they say, a retainer agreement, but there has never been a retainer agreement signed. So that was deceptive. The problem here is that you can have an oral agreement. A retainer doesn't need to be in writing. So it's perfectly legal for Trump to have had an oral understanding with Michael Cohen. You're my lawyer. I love the counseling you're doing. You keep coming to my office. You give me good tips. Here, I'm paying $130,000 to you. So I don't see here that this will be sufficient, just the word retainer, to be interpreted as deceptive. You need to do quite a jump of logic here. Blah says, Jeff, how would TRP respond to a species doing a smear campaign against it that has an infinite source of finance? Well, it's pretty clear. TRP would respond by generating humans who are sycophantic to it. It would generate humans that are pretty much like the MAGA Trump base, you know? It would generate big fans of TRP. It would modify people genetically so that they don't believe those smears and that they cherish their relationship with the revolutionary phenotype. So then a lot of the actions are actually performed by other people than Trump. So the Trump Organization controller, for example, the Trump Organization accounts payable supervisor. So how are they going to make the case that these actions were ultimately stemming from Trump, that Trump intended those actions? Because Trump could just say to all these claims of the things that were made by the supervisor, I wasn't aware that he was doing this. I just told him to keep care of my book and warn me if he needs to know anything. And he never came to me. He never asked me about it. So I'm not the guy who wrote retainer. They are. So a lot of these claims will not hold to any sort of thinking by the jury that would say, okay, is Trump here in a mens rea of intending a deception? Well, if he's not even written the words, go get the other guy who wrote the words if you think he committed a crime. This is so wrong. It is misdirected prosecution. The 35,000 payments stopped after December 2017. Ariel Suarez sends a super chat. He says, JF, you'll find the suppressing woman's two account, paragraph 16, hilarious. Did I pass it? The paragraph 16. About 1 month before the election, news broke that the defendant had been caught on tape saying to the host of Access Hollywood, I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. Just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab him by the pussy. You can do anything. The evidence shows that both the defendant and his campaign staff were concerned that the tape would harm his viability as a candidate and reduce his standing with female voters in particular. Well, I don't know what I'm supposed to find hilarious there, because I've been knowing about this story. I mean, I was making videos about this back in the days when it was happening. I was covering a lot of the Trump stuff at the initiation of the campaign. I guess it's hilarious, but I've been seeing it so much that it's not surprising me anymore. The defendant falsified business records, so a continuation where we were at. the accounts payable, the TO controller did this and that. The investigation into Liar A and the defendant's pressure campaign. So here they claim that Trump's email were pressuring Michael Cohen not to betray him. And this would be some kind of evidence of, oh, see, he wanted to incite Michael Cohen not to plead guilty. So that's evidence of guilt. But this is extremely circumstantial evidence in terms of the construction of the argument. So Trump has always been saying, and it's even quoted in these various numbers, Trump has always been saying on social media, I find it very sad that Michael Cohen seems to be headed toward succumbing to the pressure and making up lies about me, as the leftist media wants him to do. So it's very clear in Trump's public communication that he was not pressuring Michael Cohen to lie. He was encouraging Michael Cohen not to lie. He was saying, don't make up a story about me as they want you to do. Because back in those days, if I remember correctly, and it's been years, but if I remember correctly, the prosecution was putting pressure on Michael Cohen. They had stuff about him, and they wanted to go after him for tax evasion and all that sort of stuff. And they were like, if you collaborate with us against Trump, maybe we'll go easy on you. That was the situation in which Trump was encouraging Michael Cohen to not make up stuff about him. It cannot be illegal to try to encourage someone to be loyal to you and not tell lies about you. Well, that is exactly what Trump has done on every public record he could. His Twitter, his public speech about this. So he says, you are making a very big mistake if you believe the stories these journalists are writing about you. They want you to cave. They want you to fail. They do not want you to persevere and succeed. So those are words of encouragement. You need quite an overreach to claim that this is somehow a conspiracy where Trump was trying to get him to lie to the court or lie to the justice system as a whole. And then what they have that's strong for their case, but again, doesn't come from Trump, is the fact that Michael Cohen and the National Enquirer guy, they both admitted their crime. But they've admitted their crime based on their mens rea. That doesn't mean Trump, before those crimes were even committed, these supposed crimes, that doesn't mean Trump understood the situation in the same way. Sometimes Trump could have understood this as, hey, I'm speaking to Michael Cohen. He's a professional liar. So he's going to know whether he's going to know whether he's committing a crime. So I'm giving him the money because I want to pay. And that's a private decision and it's a business decision. As far as what he does with the money, hopefully he's a liar. So he should know what to do with it in a way that's not criminal. Rodi Lacid says, maybe getting Cohen as a liar isn't always good. No, they will revert against you right at the moment where you go against their group. That is what happens. So they're never really your liar. All right, so we are attaining the end and there's nothing else. So we have nothing in there that is an audio recording of Trump admitting that he was engaging in this whole scheme. All we have is Trump did pay money, but not with the awareness that it would be used in illegal ways. Perhaps Michael Cohen had a guilty mind as he was taking that money, but Trump is not the one who, if there's a crime in there, Trump isn't the one who committed it. So that's my conclusion for the Trump indictment. Trump indictment released as Manhattan DA holds press conference. So Trump, in 25 minutes from now, will be starting his rally speech in Florida, or perhaps later. But he's certainly called people to be present at 8:15 p.m. Eastern Time. We had also this news item. Trump calls for the indictment of DA Bragg, claiming he leaked charges illegally. Yeah, because we signed the document that the media's claims of the last week that there were that CNN, you know, was publicizing that there were 24 counts. Well, they were right. That was exactly the number of counts. So who leaked that information? If by the standard of DA Bragg, Trump is guilty of everything that his accountants and lawyers do, isn't DA Bragg certainly guilty of what his staffers have done, if it's been leaked by a staffer? We have Pearly Things, just Pearly Things, making a reversal. I didn't expect this. You know how she had decided to delete the video and had apologized and was saying there's no place for racism in society? Someone told her, re-upload the Nick interview. And that was in response to her being persecuted, apparently. She was saying, it's funny, the more I talk about these slaves contracts, the more I get offers begging to take one. Anyways, full statement likely Friday. So it's not clear. She hasn't made a full statement yet. But apparently something is happening around her contractual arrangements. She's been offered stuff to shut up or stuff to do things in the direction that they want. Anyways, this led some guy to say, re-upload the Nick interview. Perhaps there's something that happened. Perhaps she's not under a gag order anymore. Maybe she had signed contracts that were forcing her to not be for racism, and perhaps she has been released from these contracts. I don't know. We'll have to wait for Friday for the full story. But she answers to this tweet, I will. So is Just Pearly Thing back on the path of basedness, or is she just a woman? I think the chances are that she's just a woman navigating all of the attention and trying to grab as much of the based side and as much as the non-based side. It's like woman cannot be just content with being loved by a single person. They want the attention of the whole world. But that's not possible. You have a clash of society. You have the right, the left. You have those who are for truth, those who are for lies. And she wants to be loved by everyone. So every week, she's going to continue switching. Next week, it's going to be an apology and an appearance on a black podcast with 30 black hosts. Because she's already went on the podcast where she was along 8 or 9 black hosts. The next apology she makes next week, she's probably going to have to go on a 30 black host podcast. And it eventually it gets higher and higher, and you find yourself on Pornhub with a record number of dicks per 24 hours. Disclose.tv says Justin, gold plus 2.10%, silver plus 4.30%, suddenly rise. Yeah, gold and Bitcoin have been doing good. There's a relative recovery of Bitcoin. Bitcoin has been flat. It has been pretty flat, but it has been doing good today. And it seems that those are the escape routes of money as people get uncertain about the economy and about the stock market. An explanation has been found around the whole Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez story, where it was claimed that she would have operated a burner account, posing as someone else, faking who she was. Someone found an explanation. Apparently, it would be due to a circumstantial random events that have all aligned in some weird way, where the person that was controlling the burner account actually tried responding to a tweet that had a retweet of some other tweet. And apparently they've discovered that when you misclick on the tweet that retweets, you end up being redirected to what was being retweeted. And this would have led the person, Zaza, who people were believing that it could be AOC in a disguise, but it turns out that Zaza may have just been misclicking on a given tweet, and apparently the stories lined up, where as Zaza was answering, hey, I'm not a Nazi, or whatever Zaza was saying, it fits just as much if you think that it's AOC responding to an AOC tag tweet than if it is Zaza answering to a misclicked retweet. I'm not digging deeper than this. I'm going to trust the story. because that at least is how I understand the story is being presented that way. It's such an element of detail. And anyways, I've never said that I was sure that AOC was behind the account. I've always said, as I reported on this a couple of days ago, I said the evidence is not decisive, and so that's still my position. The evidence is not decisive, but there's actually a valid hypothesis on the other side. Now, Tennessee House GOP moves to expel three Democratic representatives after they joined gun control protest on the House floor. Interesting, you know, these three Democrats have basically made an insurrection. They've made an insurrection in Tennessee. They joined protests that blocked the House floor, that slowed down the Democratic proceeding. So are we going to have national coverage of this? I don't think so. But that is very much like the January 6th event. Yet it is Democrats committing it, and so no one cares. Anyways, the Democrats have attempted making a campaign of misinformation around this. They started claiming that the three Democratic representatives were illegally kicked out. And I've seen it happen in the community notes community. We started to see a rise of all those tweets claiming illegally kicked out the Democrats. But as it turns out, people wrote community notes that were of very high quality, that were showing, it was not illegal to kick those Democrats. They were protesting in a way that slows down the Democratic proceeding. So they were kicked out in the same way the Trump supporters were kicked out on January 6th. That is because if you're there to make noise and not let the Democratic process happen, then it's legal to kick you out. Photographer captures ultra-rare red ring of light over Italy. A rare and mysterious phenomenon called ELV. ELV, that is so funny. Like an elf in French. Des elf. Elvine. When we say, there's probably an equivalent in the English language, but you know, of the elf, a qualifier of the elves, we could say Elvine or Elvic or Elvish. And now we have a phenomena happening in the sky called ELV. DK Shadow says elves. Elven. Yeah, elven. That would be the term in English. Yes. Stephen Hawking's famous black hole paradox may finally have a solution. The Hawking radiation emitted by black holes may be able to carry information after all. This information may lurk in the radiation around black holes, colloquially known as quantum hair, and could in theory be retrieved to retell the origins of those black holes. These findings, published in Physics Letters B, may finally resolve a thorny problem that Hawking was working on in his last years. So that was the information paradox. We were initially imagining the Hawking radiation as coming out of the black hole, but stripped of any past information. And as a consequence, that led the black hole to be a black hole of information, basically, also. And that was a problem to some quantum physicists. they were annoyed at the fact that basically causality appeared to break, and that there cannot be a loss of information in quantum systems. And they were like, that is a problem, because there is a loss of information when things get into a black hole and then they get out through Hawking radiation. It appears that we are in the dark as to what happened in between. And in fact, once the Hawking radiation is released, you cannot retrace back into the past. So that was a kind of cut that was depriving us of information from the past. But apparently they now have a theoretical solution that could constitute a solution. Activated sleeper, you know this graph, I've talked about it, and yesterday I described my issue. My issue that I take with this graph is you probably have a set of events happening in the 70s that lead to the economy being much more productive than it used to be, and much more productive without further human work. So we have automatization, we have electricity, we have electronics, and I'm not saying that electricity was invented in the 70s, but certainly many applications that make electricity usable and useful, they all speed up the process of production in the economy, but very often with less employees. So you need less human work to produce things. And so it wouldn't be surprising that the workers have lost their leverage onto the companies, because the companies are basically freeing themselves from the need of having so many workers to operate all of their machines. Now, people have been super frustrated and have been arguing with me all day. I took this one to be representative, but there were some haters in this thread. This one was more polite. He said, "JF, your theory fails to take into account the development and implementation of machinery previous to this date." And I don't think it's a valid counter to my argument. My argument is basically this graph is relying on an assumption of productivity, the assumption that all productivity stems from workers. And what I'm saying is, I don't know that. I don't think so. I think that there are massive improvements of productivity since the 70s that are precisely involving removal of workers, involving less workers doing more things. So I don't think it's a valid counter to say, "Oh, well, Jeff, what about the machinery that was existing in 1948? The machinery that was existing in 1948 probably required more men to operate. These big machines of the industries that were melting metal and all this, you needed a lot of human work to operate this. This is very different from the electronics and eventually computer revolution, where those actually make your employee charge lower. There were, of course, massive gains in industrial productions before 1970 in terms of productivity. But one characteristic of all these machines is that they were highly dependent on humans still. So I'm personally not surprised that we wouldn't see the two curves separate before a certain type of machine shows up in the economy. And that type of machine, I'm not arguing that all machines will always lead to a separation between hourly compensation and productivity. What I'm arguing is you cannot assume that all gains of productivity are due to the worker. Simple as. Some of them are due purely to effectiveness of the ways of doing, changes in the bureaucratic systems that control company, and automatization of the processes of a company. Trump indictment has been unsealed, so CNN was covering this all day. It was quite fascinating to see all day the leftists just gloating and being so happy. Ha-ha, Trump is getting arrested! And Mengele says the graph has nothing to do with machines. It represents the decoupling from gold standard. It's basically currency debasement. Well, that is an interesting explanation. And I'm not even saying that that's untrue. But I'm saying when the communists show you this and they say, look at this, the CEOs are just draining your wealth more. And this is just because this whole difference right here is just because they're stealing your work. That is the explanation that I disagree with. This whole communistic assumption that anything that a company produces ultimately boils down to human work, I don't agree. I don't agree. And when I said how this graph was calculated, the productivity here that they calculate is actually the sum of all products in the economy, and they divide it by the average hours worked by all citizens in the economy. That is a way that bears a false assumption in it. It's a methodology that is flawed because of an assumption hidden in it. And that assumption is productivity always boils down to the human work. Well, it's not the case. Blah says, Jeff, are you going to develop any computational models of TRP to prove it more thoroughly? I'll tell you what, 99.99% of the modeling, computational neuroscience, computational biology world is absolute crap, absolute deceptive, just making it look mathematics, and I will not do that kind of stuff. I could easily make, oh yeah, look a little symbol that represents the replicator tango, and oh, look at the mathematics at play here and there. I'm never going to do this because I think we can all agree that the revolutionary phenotype is such a simple idea, really, when you boil it down to what it is. It's a simple idea. It doesn't need specification in special mathematics. There's no need to represent this as integrals or derivatives. It would be an absolute waste of human thought, text, and book space. So I was very clear in chapter 9, I'm not doing the math. I don't give a shit. You can do the math if you like it, but I can express a human idea that's understandable in the English language, and that is as much a formal way of communication than mathematics. Mathematics would not embellish the revolutionary phenotype. Mathematics would just give you the illusion of seriousness. And believe me, I love math. I mean, I'm doing math every day. Every day I go to sleep and I spend 30 minutes, an hour, working on the Goldbach conjecture. But I will not soil math nor TRP with the ugliness of each other. John Drake says, I look for it, got it off a news aggregate. Okay, that was not meant to me. Anti-Trump protesters trying to incite an uproar. So that was before Trump arrived in New York. Well, before Trump arrived at the courtroom.
Hour that we covered years ago. And what this lady does is she gets in the middle of everybody. And she does just that. She tries to troll them. She harasses them with her bizarre behavior. And this is what she wants. She wants to get tangled up. She wants to get, you know, and you can't have a conversation with these people. You just can't do it. I engage you to do. They're not here really.
Okay, well, the commentary on RSBN is kind of very dominating of the actual news. So there was a fight with one media guy. Don't ever fuck with me. And the guy is supposed to be a professional. And we haven't seen on the video, unfortunately, what was it that this guy was doing to fuck with him.
I will kill your motherfucking ass.
Threatens to kill. that would be a crime in New York, right? Now you have it on video. So why doesn't DA Bragg pursue that kind of crime, which is on video, rather than a crime of intent and of constructions around what Trump did? MTJ was there. She joined the protesters today.
Also to the Mayor Adams. As you can see, I'm sitting here peacefully protesting, but you called me out by name. While you allow crime in your streets and you send your henchmen down here to commit assault against people by making loud noises, assault against police officers who are doing their jobs, trying to prevent violence. Democrats are the party of violence.
There's people trying to convince a police to arrest her for assault because she speaks in a speakerphone?
They're the party that enabled and funded and cheered for violent riots all through 2020. And they...
All right, so MTJ being there, just chilling with the protesters. Millennials CEO accused of tricking JP Morgan into $175 million purchase. Charged with fraud. So this girl, we've been talking about her before, and there had been already some proceedings initiated, but at this point she has been charged with fraud. She made up a whole fake company with faked millions of accounts to make the case that, hey, we're popular. And then she had JP Morgan invest in this giant company. She has been part of the list of the 30 under 30 of Forbes, like one of the rising stars of the business world, but it was all a big lie. And finally, last news item, some more scenes coming from New York. It was absolutely chaotic in New York, and there was this bizarre person yelling, "Fuck white people." Of course, I'm not showing it to support what this person was saying, but merely to report the news here to just so you can understand how intense and chaotic it was in front of the courtroom.
All right, guys, this is the Van Hernandez on the Trump supporting side of the Manhattan Criminal Court. And we have this woman right here. She is a Biden supporter.
Fuck white people!
Who's coming and trying to instigate violence with Trump supporters here. She keeps coming up to business. She keeps...
Okay, so it just occurred to me what's happening here. She is a black woman wearing white face. See, I believe that she is attempting to insult white people by wearing white face because she thinks, well, if wearing black face makes me feel like a victim, I guess that I can wear white face to victimize the white people. Okay, I had not understood this. It had not occurred to me that I should be insulted by white face, or that like it could be something that hurts me, that I feel targeted by, because she's culturally appropriating my skin color. And look at who we have behind. I mean, I have to move the screen. I mean, I think we need a zoom. Of course, behind those anti-white attacks, we find what is behind. No, I thought I had recognized him. No, I don't know who that is, Ray. I don't know who that person is with a little hat. I thought I was zooming in because I thought, hey, this guy I know. But no, I don't know him.
Shut my white ass! Shut my white ass! Get my white ass, bitch!
And this is what we're dealing with today.
I love this Asian reporter. And this is what we're dealing with. she's showing herself while the inevitable moment where this woman is starting to twerk. It's like there is nothing else that she knows how to do. It always ends up in twerking.
today. This is Biden supporters in 2024. We have Trump supporters trying to be peaceful. The police are back here trying to keep
I want Marjorie Taylor Greene to molest me.
Is standing here as we try to enter the area. I want Marjorie Taylor Greene to molest me. And keep...
She wants something green to molest her?
So I'm trying to tell them that the racist that they're the peaceful. So welcome to New York City, Indictment Day, 2023, baby!
Molest me, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Let's go, folks. Oh, she wants Marjorie Taylor Greene to molest her. Well, on this, I'm going to sleep. Thank you.